Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There were three ravens sat on a tree. Down a down, hey, down a down. They were as black as they might be with a down. One of them said to his mate, where shall we our breakfast take? With a down, dairy, 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 down, down.
Welcome to a bonus episode of the Three Ravens podcast, and this one's special because it absolutely cannot be repeated for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Today, we are going to be delving into the history and traditions of Leap Day, the 29th of February. I'm Eleanor Conlon, and I've got a red petticoat and a bowl full of pig trotters, and I'm ready to attend this extremely exclusive party, along with my co-host Martin Vaux. Martin, what are you doing?
I'm leaping!
Well, it looks very energetic.
Thank you.
But you'd better save it for the 12 days of Christmas, when you flex your leaping lord muscles, because Leap Day has nothing to do with jumping over or on top of anything, or even just general purpose jumping for fun and profit.
Well, I guess in that case, I'll sit down.
I, for one, am actually feeling rather like I need an extra day in February to catch up with everything I need to do. I don't know about all of you, but 2020 for us has already been non-stop.
Well, we did have a lovely break to the southwest last weekend, where we managed to see some sights we've been hoping to see for a while, including Old Sarum and Avebury Ring.
Yes. We are hoping things will calm down a bit soon, however, because we're very nearly at the end of our first lap around England's 39 historic counties. On Monday, we'll be visiting Norfolk for our final episode in this series, and I can't believe how quickly it's come around, actually.
Yeah, it has been mad, but I think part of that has just been keeping up with the schedule we set ourselves. We've sort of been our own worst enemies in a way, haven't we?
We have!
Anyway, we're going to be taking a bit of a break from main episodes after that, but we will still be releasing some lovely bonus content, including new listener episodes and some of your amazing folky flash fiction too.
Thank you so much to everyone who's already entered our flash fiction competition. We've been overwhelmed with amazing entries and we can't wait to share some of those with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to enter and haven't yet, there's still time. Get us your original fiction of up to 1,000 words by Monday, the 4th of March.
We'll also be releasing Patreon exclusive episodes all during the break. So if you fancy extra Three Ravens content while we're gone, please consider visiting patreon.com/Three Ravens podcast to find out what it's all about. You can subscribe for $3 a month or $6 a month, and every subscription helps us make that podcast bigger and better and more leapy.
We actually have a Patreon exclusive out today, the latest episode of the Three Ravens Film Club, where we'll be talking about 1984's The Company of Wolves. So prepare your ears for a lot of howling.
Yes, apologies about that.
No apologies from me.
Our new newsletter will also be coming out tomorrow, and it'll be packed full of folk customs for the month, a magic spell and a tarot spread, recommendations of things we've been enjoying, and lots more besides.
Otherwise, if you want to keep abreast of where we've been flapping our ink dark wings and what we've been up to, you can find us on social media at facebook.com/3ravenspodcast, Instagram at 3ravenspodcast, and X at 3ravenspod.
And of course, we have the 3Ravens podcast group on Facebook, which is always full of lovely chat and interesting things.
So it is leap day today.
Huzzah!
Like election terms, it only occurs every 4 years.
And we gain from it an extra day of February? Who decided this? Who wanted this? In my view, February has gone on far too long already.
Interestingly, a petition has actually been mounted to move the extra day in a leap year to June to give us an extra day of summer instead.
Clever.
It hasn't got very far.
So do we actually know why this happens in February?
We do. It fits into the fine old Roman tradition of messing with the second month of the year.
All right, let's backtrack a little then. Why do we need a leap day at all? And who started this madness?
So we add the extra day to the calendar every 4 years, essentially to ensure that our calendar stays roughly in line with the Earth's movement around the sun. We have 365 days in the calendar, but it actually takes Earth slightly longer to orbit the sun than that. It takes 365.2421 days.
Right, okay.
And this may feel like not that much to worry about, but imagine the effect after hundreds of years of this happening.
Yeah.
The extra days added in to kind of make up the lost time and get the calendar back in sync with the movements of the planets. Also, rather pleasingly, it's the last day of meteorological winter in the Northern Hemisphere, so we can officially say winter's over tomorrow.
Well, hooray! Even though leap day has meant that winter has been prolonged by a day.
Yes. So, how did all this start?
Yes, how did it start?
Well, we have what Samuel Pepys might have described as a sad and ugly pickle, had he been alive in the ancient world, especially at the hands of the early Romans. While some other ancient calendars, including the Chinese, Buddhist, and Hebrew calendars, indicated the position of the moon as well as the sun, they regularly required intercalary or interstitial months to keep them on track. But these had no real rhyme or reason. They were not regular.
So how on earth did ancient civilizations manage to stay on track? I'm presuming, because we obviously get the word month from the moon, right? So is it all lunar?
Basically, they did not stay on track.
Oh, right. Okay.
The whole thing is couched in uncertainty and vagueness.
Excellent.
And we've discussed the early Roman calendar before on the podcast, but to summarise, it consisted of just 10 months with an extremely loosely defined period of winter after those 10 months, not recorded in the calendar, which meant that the calendar and the actual lunar solar year had less in common than perhaps they should have.
Yes, we chatted about this on our Valentine's Day episode, didn't we? I did quite a bit of research into the Roman calendar.
Yes, and as you said then, the uncertain winter mess was replaced by two new months, January and February. But that still didn't really sort out the chaos which had happened when the calendar and the year had unconsciously uncoupled.
I have to say, I feel like lately I've been an uncertain winter mess.
Yes, a few people could probably identify with that.
Yep.
But so to compensate for this mess, yes, they inserted an extra intercalary month called Mercedonius to help make up the difference.
They did, yeah.
But rather than putting Mercedonius in between months, like sensible people, they stuck its 23 mysterious days right in the middle of February.
Now, one wonders who thought that was a good idea, like stuffing some extra days into a month.
Fatten up February, yeah, with this Mercedonius.
And I've been clear enough, I feel, on the podcast. February's the worst month. I'm sorry if your birthday is in February. I'm sure it's a very special highlight of what is an otherwise terrible time of year, but February, it's rubbish, isn't it?
Even once Mercedonius had been decided on as a concept,
yeah,
they couldn't quite decide when to hold it, and its dates became subject to corruption.
Corruption?
I'm sorry to say.
Oh.
Well, yeah, so basically it was down to the consuls when Mercedonius would be held each year, and they often just abused their power to shorten or extend the year for political gain.
Oh, can you imagine? I think if it was me, I'd probably put it towards the end of January to give myself some extra time to do my tax returns.
Yes, that's a good idea, actually. Mm-hmm. Tax return month.
Yep.
And it was complete chaos until conqueror, salad eater, and all-round scheduling hero Julius Caesar came along.
Nice.
And decided that Macedonius, when we feel like it, wasn't actually an acceptable way to run a new style empire.
Good old Julius Caesar.
So while in Egypt, Caesar became impressed by, well, a number of things, but one of them was the Egyptian solar calendar with its fancy 365 days and astronomy ordained intercalary months. He decided to adopt it with a key change that he cooked up with the philosopher Sosigenes of Alexandria. The adding of a day to every fourth year rather than relying on the stars.
Ah.
And because all Romans apparently hated February and wanted to confuse it, they decided this day would be tacked on to the end of the second month of the year.
Right.
And it took an initial year to fix the mess. So the year 46 BC had some wild extra long months just kind of shoved into it. But then the Julian calendar was formally adopted on January the 1st, 45 BC.
Well done, Julius Caesar, sorting things out. And so I'm guessing after that, time was forevermore fixed. No more problems, right?
Well, sort of.
Oh.
The Julian calendar more or less fixed things, and it wasn't until the 16th century that philosophers and astronomers noticed that time was still a little bit slippery. Mm. They realised it was due to Sosigenes' calculations being slightly off. He had thought that a solar year lasted for 365.25 days.
Yeah. Well, that's quite close, isn't it? What was the mass that
it's
you said?
Very close, but he overestimated by a crucial 11 minutes.
What? I mean, come on, that's just a rounding error, surely.
Well, one wonders, but anyway, the Catholic Church started to get involved because they felt the 11 minutes was quite important. And good old Pope Gregory the 13th decided that he would actually rather prefer a calendar with his own name on it than a nasty heathen Roman calendar. He did keep leap day, though, but it was removed from centurial years not divisible by 400.
Oh, of course, yeah. What does that even mean?
Seems a confusing way to go about things, but more or less works.
Oh, more or less works.
Yeah,
what?
So if you can divide the year by 400, no leap day.
Uh-huh. Oh, God. This feels so chaotic.
Even then.
But also so anal. What's
even then,
going on?
It's still a tiny bit off.
Oh, no.
But nobody will have to worry about correcting it for quite some time, as it's only wrong by about a day every 3,030 years.
Well, I'm going to say that that probably won't be our problem. I mean, even as vampires who have lived for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, I think 3,030 years, it's not going to affect us.
We're going to be staked by then, aren't we? Yeah.
Although it was actually quite scientific when it came down to it. The church also had a more fanciful explanation for how leap day came about. They also sometimes referred to it as the bisextus.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It does sound fun. Or the bisextile.
Yes. That sounds even more fun.
They asserted that it had come about when the biblical figure Joshua prayed to God for the sun to stand still for one day so he could sweep the heathens from the land.
I mean, of course. Of course. Totally plausible.
Why he couldn't do this on any day, I'm not sure. But the incident is in the Bible, in the book of Joshua, chapter 10, verses 12 to 14. If you'd care to verify it.
Oh, well, if it's in the Bible, then we can read it as fact, can't we? And that's nowhere near as exciting as the name suggested.
Interestingly, if Mr. Elon Musk does manage to realise his dream of colonising Mars, Martian leap years would need to be much more frequent, because it takes approximately 668.6 days for Mars to revolve around the sun. So that imbalance would require 6 years in every 10 to be leap years.
Well, that's a whole load of leap days, isn't it?
It is. And I think Elon Musk should take that into consideration when making his plans.
Well, that's one thing Elon Musk is known to be, isn't it? Considerate.
Yes. And I think if each leap day celebration on Mars included some of the traditional observances we're going to talk about, it would probably cause a lot of trouble too.
Oh, excellent. Good. Now, you know, whenever I think about leap days, I just think about how rubbish it must be if your birthday falls on a leap day. Imagine only getting to celebrate your birthday every 4 years. Like, would you move it to one of the surrounding days or both of the surrounding days? Or would you save all your money up to have a huge party every 4 years and only get a quarter as old as anyone else?
I think I'd do that. It could be really fun to have a massive party every 4 years.
Yeah.
But actually, there are only about 5 million people who share in those dubious celebrations. there are really quite low odds of being born on leap day.
Mm.
However, if you're one of them, you can call yourself a leapling, which I think sounds like some sort of fairy species. And you can also join the Honor Society of Leap Day Babies.
I mean, it's nice that they have a society, but a leapling sounds like you're a half frog toad.
It's great, isn't it? I think it's a brilliant term. The Guinness Book of Records has also recorded various Leap Day world record holders, including a family which produced three consecutive generations born on February the 29th.
Oh my.
And the number of children born on February the 29th in the same family.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that family must have had a really special occasion that they like to mark to conceive babies 9 months beforehand.
Indeed. Mm. Someone's wedding anniversary is going to line up there, isn't it?
Yep, in our family, we always get married on the same day, and it just so works out. Ooh, that's a bit gross, isn't it?
And in the town of Antony, Texas, a four-day-long celebration is held around each leap day ever since 1988, when Antony was declared leap year capital of the world.
What? Leap year capital of the world? Why? Why?
Well, I think just because two ladies from Antony who were born on leap day lived there.
Oh.
And decided it would be nice to run a big birthday party for all those people who had to wait 4 years.
I mean, that's great. That's very public-spirited of them. But also, is it great to be known as the leap year town? I don't know.
Right. I don't know. Anyway, it is.
It
you
is.
You can attend. So if you're anywhere near Texas around this time of year, you can probably have some fun. Cool. Attend the festival. February the 29th is also St. Oswald's Day. Now, we love a strange saint's day here in the Three Ravens Nest. So I naturally had to look into the life of Oswald.
And so, was he a miraculous, helpful saint or one of those kind of awful death martyred saints? What's the deal?
Awful death saint with a side order of posthumous miracles.
Oh, so he did some after he was dead.
Yeah, none in the lifetime, but a few after death. He has actually cropped up for us before as well. Oswald of Northumbria was a 7th century king who united Benicia and Deira and also helped promote the spread of Christianity through Anglia at the time. And he had visions, particularly of St. Columba, apparently, who visited him before battle to tell him he'd be victorious, which is quite nice, very helpful.
Lovely.
Although she didn't pop up before the ill-fated Battle of Massifeld, where Oswald came a cropper at the hands of our old friend Penda of Mercia in 642.
Penda.
So the pagan Mercian armies, as led by Penda, dismembered Oswald and strung the various parts of him up on a tree to be eaten by birds.
I remember this, yes.
Yes. Or in the case of his right arm, carried off by a raven to a sacred ash tree.
Yeah.
And a spring emerged from the tree where the arm was left and was capable of healing wounds, as was dirt taken from the site where Oswald had died, apparently.
Fantastic. So dying in battle and then maybe lending healing properties to a spring. They're not really miracles, Oswald, I'm going to say.
There's a bit more. When some of his bones were recovered and moved, a pillar of light appeared over the bone wagon and shone up into the sky.
The bone wagon.
I mean, what else would you call a conveyance that moves saintly bones?
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, teenage boys and what they might call their first car. Anyway, carry on.
Martin.
Yes.
Eventually,
yes.
Oswald's head was interred in Durham Cathedral. Probably.
Oh, probably.
Probably. I say probably because there are at least four other heads of St. Oswald in various parts of Europe, where he was, to all reports, quite popular. There was quite a cult of Oswald in the medieval period.
Well, who knows? He could have been four-headed. Maybe that helped him in his battle tactics.
He could have been. And, you know, you could see why Penda's armies would want to dismember him, obviously thinking him some terrifying four-headed demon.
That's it. Get the monster! Chop, chop, chop.
He was a somewhat divided man, St. Oswald, actually.
Well, evidently, yeah.
As one of his arms, possibly not the same one as the raven took, ended up in Peterborough Abbey, not having rotted, so it was miraculously uncorrupted
many
years after his death. And they built it its own chapel there.
Its own chapel?
Yes.
Well, that's very nice. And I'm guessing that this arm made its own way, like Thing from the Addams Family?
Unclear. Possibly also loaded into a bone wagon.
Okay.
But history has forgotten that detail. The chapel's quite interesting. Interesting, actually. It is a really tiny space which can only be accessed by a very narrow, steep staircase, and there's only room for one monk to stand guard over the arm.
Wow.
And there's not room for him to sit down or sleep.
So you have to stand there.
Yeah, you have to stand there because people thought that if the arm was left unattended, something bad might happen. We don't know what. Just something bad.
So what's it? Is it called the Chapel of the Arm?
I think it might be called the Chapel of the Arm. I think it's called the Chapel of St. Oswald.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But Eleanor, this was Leap Day long before St. Oswald was in short trousers. And I want to hear about some folky customs. We've got all day after all, and I want to celebrate.
And celebrate we shall with some excellent traditions and superstitions right after this.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So, I have always thought the key custom on Leap Day was that women were allowed to propose marriage to men. It was like the only time where it was seen as socially acceptable to do so. Is there any truth in that?
It is an interesting idea, which is fairly old in origin. I think the basic justification for it is that it balances the traditional roles of men and women when it comes to marriage proposals, in the same way that Leap Day every 4 years balances the calendar.
Yeah, I mean, that seems incredibly outdated at this point in time.
It is indeed, although the association of Leap Day with reversing gender roles has persisted.
Really?
Yes, I was speaking to somebody just the other day who had proposed to her husband, but she would only do it on Leap Day.
That's so cute.
Yeah. I really didn't think this would hold much water in the modern world, actually. So I looked at some research on the subject and I was quite surprised to discover that the notion that it's the man's role to propose is still fairly widespread, even now. However, a survey of women who were keen to propose this year, so today, cited a variety of reasons for wanting to propose on Leap Day. 40% of the women surveyed simply said they wanted to surprise their partner, which is very nice.
Yeah.
While 39% said they didn't believe that only men can propose.
No.
17% found it empowering, while 14% said that they were getting fed up of waiting for their partner to pop a question.
Well, congratulations if you did propose today and were accepted. That's a point, though. If you get married on a leap day, how often do you celebrate your wedding anniversary?
It must be similar to the birthday thing.
I am naturally pretty unhappy with the notion that only men can propose, as it harks back to a time when women were regarded as property without the power to take their own lives into their hands. But we still see a persistence of the same attitudes now, don't we?
Well, perhaps. Although a 2023 survey of unmarried men found that 70% of men would be thrilled if their female partners proposed to them. So I do wonder why we're still clinging on to this notion that it's the fella's job, except on Leap Day, of course.
Yeah, and so when was it generally decreed that it was all right for ladies to even propose on Leap Day?
Well, sources suggest that the custom comes from 5th century Ireland.
Wow.
As a result of a discussion between St. Bridget of Kildare and St. Patrick. Yeah, I mean, you're already quite sceptical about this, aren't you?
Yep.
Bridget was apparently a bit concerned that women were having to wait too long for proposals of marriage and were just sort of stuck in their parents' homes for longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
So she asked her pal St. Patrick if he would decree that women could propose to men too. And Patrick sort of agreed, with the caveat that it could only happen once every 4 years on Leap Day.
Oh, what's the issue, St. Patrick? What's your problem?
Honestly, one could probably write a book entitled St. Patrick's Problems, couldn't one, at this point in time?
Yes, that's true.
Anyway, this decree, which may or may not have been issued by the legendary St. Patrick, became known as the Ladies' Privilege, and Leap Day was also known as Bachelor's Day in some places. The tradition made it over the Irish Sea to Scotland and England, and that's when things start to get interesting.
I'm just going to say right now, before we advance any further, that the likelihood of this story being based in truth, it does seem unlikely to me. And this is because the historical St. Bridget, if she was real, and St. Patrick, lived at completely different times.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Even if we stretch our credibility to say that they were both saints and thus touched by the hand of God and may have had preternaturally long lives.
Yes.
Or seen each other in dream visions, or, you know, there are many ways this could work.
Yeah, maybe it was like Quantum Leap. You know, maybe one of them was a time traveller.
Exactly.
And just kept journeying back and forth.
Yes, and visions, Martin.
Oh, of course, visions. Yeah, of course, visions. Anyway, so do we know if ladies really took advantage of their privilege to do this?
Well, they certainly did, because a materialistic twist was added.
Really?
Yes. If a woman proposed to a man on leap day and he wanted to refuse for whatever reason, he actually had to pay her a penalty.
Yes, I've heard a little bit about this and think I alluded to it slightly in our Valentine's Day episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
And these penalties varied, but would usually involve some financial cost to the man. He might have to buy the woman 12 pairs of gloves, one for each month of the following year.
I see, yep.
And the intention with that was that the poor, rejected woman would then be able to wear the gloves to hide the embarrassment of having no engagement
ring. Oh, that's slightly tragic. But also, I have to say, if I was a really obnoxious woman, I'd go around on leap day just proposing to every man I could possibly find, knowing they'd all say no.
You'd get your bluff called sooner or later, though, wouldn't you?
Maybe, but that's okay. I'd still get married, and then they'll probably break the engagement anyway because I'll be such a rat bag. Meanwhile, I've set up a glove company.
It really does seem like quite a good racket once you've cracked the system, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you're being totally cynical. I mean, if you propose to a couple of different men who you are pretty sure you didn't want to marry you, you could have a whole new wardrobe before spring.
You really could. I mean, I imagine if it had an effect on the glove economy, you know, if glove prices suddenly dropped after leap days.
I do wonder. Well, the tradition of giving gloves to cover a ringless hand was also carried on in Denmark, but there was a bit of a twist in Finland. The refusing man had to give the woman a gift of fabric to make a new skirt.
What?
Yeah, presumably to make herself look lovely so she wouldn't be refused next time.
Yeah, in 4 years. At least she had time to work on it.
Yeah, it could be a really good skirt by then. Other gifts given to compensate for the disappointment included silk gowns, fur coats, or the refusing man having to perform a juggling trick on Easter Sunday, which presumably would have given the poor woman a good laugh to help her forget her pain.
Well, that's something, I suppose. But yeah, I'm not sure that juggling quite makes up for being rejected for a wedding proposal.
I guess it depends how bad they are at juggling. Like, how humiliated will they be by this effort?
Yeah, but if you're really in love with somebody and you want them to marry you, and you propose and they're like, no, but I will juggle for you on Easter Sunday.
On the other hand, Easter Sunday, solemn feast in the church.
Yes.
If you're caught juggling, that's a fast track to hell, isn't
it? That's true.
So actually, maybe your punishment will be everlasting. Should have just accepted.
Yeah, you should have. What would Jesus think? Now, was any of this formalised in law, or was it more of an unspoken rule of society which should ne'er be violated? What's the deal?
It apparently was actually made law in 1288 by Queen Margaret of Scotland.
Awesome.
Who also had her own ideas on how things should proceed. She added that women had to wear a red petticoat when proposing on leap day and specified either a monetary fine or the gift of a silk dress for a refusal.
Blimey, do we know why the red petticoat?
It was to warn of her intent.
Oh, that's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, red for danger.
Like Caroline's
come out.
Stop sign.
Yeah, she's in a red petticoat.
Just men jumping into shrubberies or into rivers.
You know what she means, boys, when she walks down the street, you're going to have to buy gloves.
Good heavens.
It was strange. Strange that Margaret Scotland took to this, actually, considering that in Scotland it used to be considered unlucky for someone to be born on a leap day, much as Friday the 13th is still considered unlucky by many.
I mean, I wonder why leap day was considered unlucky.
Well, apparently, according to Scottish law, those born on leap day will live a life of untold suffering.
Crikey!
Leap years in general have been associated with bad conditions for farmers, too, giving rise to the rhyme, leap year was never a good sheep year. It's not very good rhyme.
No, it's not very good, but I like it.
There seems to be this sense, actually, that the natural world responds to leap year in some way. In Germany, there's another rhyming saying. It's a little bit better. Schaltjahr gleich Kaltjahr. Leap year will be a cold year.
Well, we can say with confidence that that has been true so far of this year. It's chilly out.
Exactly. Supposedly, it's also common knowledge in gardening circles that plants, particularly broad beans for some reason, grow the wrong way during leap year.
Oh, we should plant some.
Have you ever come across this, gardening listeners? Have your beans gone wrong in leap year?
And what is the wrong way for a broad bean to grow? I feel inexperienced.
Who knows? And backwards? Curly?
I don't know.
In the shape of a weasel?
We need to plant some, Ella. There's only one way to solve this problem.
Perhaps somebody can enlighten us before we have to grow the wrong beans.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The Greeks also associate leap year with negative connotations, considering it very unlucky to get married in a leap year, and especially on leap day, because these marriages are more likely to end in divorce.
One presumes that's because of fewer anniversary gifts given
maybe
by the husband.
That could be it. Yeah. But you actually shouldn't get divorced in a leap year either if you're in Greece, because those who divorce in a leap year are said not to be able to find happiness for the rest of their lives.
The rest of their lives? Oh my God, that's so heavy.
They really don't like leap year in Greece.
Right, well, evidently, yeah. Cool. So do you think that's got something to do with it being invented by the Romans? Do you think they're just jealous?
Could be.
Stupid Romans with their leap year.
There are some nice ways to celebrate Leap Day, though, which we could certainly try if you fancy it.
Well, look, if we've got the equipment and the time, you know I'm up for it.
As the nun said to the bishop. So there's a really nice tradition in Germany, which takes place on the 1st of May. Men decorate birch trees with ribbons and put them outside the homes of their wives, girlfriends, or just someone they fancy.
Oh, I failed on that one. I haven't got you a birch tree.
The 1st of May hasn't happened yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm the one who's failed, because on leap day, women decorate the birch trees and leave them outside the homes of their husbands and lovers instead.
Right, so you should have brought me a birch tree all decorated today.
I should have.
I mean, we have a rowan tree. Maybe after we finish this, you can go and tie some ribbons on it for you.
And in France, we might be able to stroll down the street today reading a copy of La Bougie du Sapeur, a special newspaper which comes out only every 4 years on Leap Day.
What?
Yep. It's named after a leapling character. I'm going to keep using that term.
Yep, do it.
He's called Camembert. And he comes from a 19th century comic created by Georges Colomb. And the paper has been published every leap day since 1980.
That's so cool.
So reports, it's very popular and outsells all the other national newspapers on its single publication day. It's more popular than Le Monde. It's more popular than Le Figaro. That's the one people buy. So if you're in France today, make sure you pick up a copy of its 12th ever edition.
That's incredible. I like that it's named after a man who sounds an awful lot like a cheese, first of all. That's
well, he's,
very cool.
He's a sapper in the army.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, and he was born on the 29th of February, and so he claims to be only 4 years old when he joins the army, and the comics about his exploits.
Very funny. I've got to say, though, doesn't feel like a terribly sustainable business model. I mean, you've got a lot of time to sell your advertising, haven't you,
in between issues? And loads of time to really work on that editorial.
Yeah, that's also true, but it's amazing that it's done so well.
Well, despite only selling for €4 or so if you are buying a single copy, you can take out a truly excellent subscription to Le Bougie du Sapeur. It's €100 for a century of subscription.
Epic.
And I guess it just features news that it's all right to wait for a while.
I mean, I've got to say, listeners, if you have a collection of all the editions since 1980, I want to see them.
All 12.
Yeah, all 12.
I bet somebody does, though.
Yeah.
Moving over to Italy, in the province of Reggio Emilia, leap years are known as L'Anno della Balena, or the whale's year.
The whale's year.
Because people there believe that whales can only give birth during leap years.
I mean, I know that whales have quite long gestation periods, but I don't think they're 4 years.
No, that is not remotely accurate. Even orca only gestate for 15 to 18 months.
I mean, we could just tell the people of Reggio Emilia, surely.
No? Don't ruin it for them.
Okay, all right.
They've believed this for centuries. Don't ruin it.
All right, carry on.
Well, I think it's interesting how leap days and leap years seem to represent quite different things across different cultures. Sometimes they seem to embody opportunity and taking the chance to do something that might not come around very often, yeah, like proposing to a man if you're a woman, if you still hold by those sentiments. Elsewhere, they seem to be incredibly bad luck and something to be avoided because they're the cause of ill fortune. Certainly, I've never found leap years to particularly affect me. Have you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I can't remember a single one in the past. It's one of those things where people say to you, what were you doing last leap day? I mean, I couldn't tell you.
Well, 2020, what was happening? Well, I can tell you something that did happen. Yeah. Joe Biden became the president of the United States.
Cool. Well, that's fun.
Last leap day in 2020, yeah.
Well done, Joe.
But you asked how we might celebrate, and I think it's always important to consider eating and drinking when you're planning a celebration.
Naturally.
So, how do you fancy some noodles with pig's trotters?
Yeah, you mentioned pig's trotters at the outset of this episode. Why pig's trotters? I can't imagine that pig's trotters would taste nice. I imagine they'd just be made of bone.
Well, in Taiwan, leap years are considered to be very bad luck for the elderly.
Yeah.
There's this belief that they might die, you know, every leap year.
I mean, so, to be fair, if they're very elderly, they might die at any point. Just like a stiff breeze could take them out.
Well, on leap day, married daughters return to their family homes to cook a special dish of pig's trotters for their parents
to try and prolong their longevity.
Oh, no, they're meant to be a really lucky food, bringing good fortune and long life. So it's meant to keep them going for another 4 years.
I mean, I'm not sold on that, but I wonder if it's to do with the shape. It's a bit like a horseshoe, maybe?
Yeah, they don't look very appealing. I did look at some pictures of it. All right then, if you don't like the sound of that, I will leave you with one we can perhaps enjoy all together. The Leap Day Cocktail.
Oh, yes, please.
Which was invented in 1928 by Harry Craddock, a barman at the Savoy Hotel in London. This drink is said to have been responsible for more proposals of marriage than any other cocktail that has ever been mixed.
Well, this sounds fun. What do we need to make our Leap Day cocktail?
Luckily, we can make a very authentic one because Craddock published a book of his recipes in 1930, the Savoy Cocktail Book, and we have a copy downstairs.
We do. We have it. We own that book.
So, all we need to do is mix a dash of lemon juice with 2/3 of gin, 1/6 of Grand Marnier and 1/6 of Italian vermouth.
Ooh.
Shake well and serve in a cocktail glass. Squeeze lemon peel on the top.
Sounds delicious.
Yep, that's all there is to it, but it does sound very delicious. However, if you fancy a non-alcoholic version, you might try substituting Grand Marnier with bitter orange syrup or non-alcoholic triple sec or something like that, so it's got that orangey flavour.
Yeah.
And some grape juice instead of vermouth could work too. And there are lots of lovely alcohol-free gins available too.
There are, yeah, we're getting quite into them, aren't we?
Well, yes, we are.
Thank you so much, Eleanor. That has been delightful and slightly mad. Fortunately, I don't need to go out and buy you a silk dress or 12 pairs of gloves, because when you proposed to me, I just said yes.
Also, it wasn't leap day.
No, that's true. That's very, very true.
We will be back on Monday with our episode all about the history and folklore of Norfolk, and a lovely new edition of the Three Ravens newsletter will be winging its way to our Patreon subscribers tomorrow. If you'd like to receive the newsletter, please consider signing up at patreon.com/3ravenspodcast.
And as we mentioned earlier, you can also join us on social media via facebook.com/3ravenspodcast, Instagram at 3ravenspodcast or X at 3ravenspod. And we have a lot of fun on the 3 Ravens podcast group too. Also, a final reminder that our Flash Folk Fiction competition is still open until the end of Series 3. So that's Monday. Please send us your original fiction of up to 1,000 words, and we're going to read all of our favourites on special episodes in the break between Series 3 and Series 4, Eleanor. Series 4!
Series 4! It will come sooner than you expect.
Oh, gosh.
So, listener, are you a leapling?
Little frog pets.
Or are you a lady who proposed on leap day?
Mm.
Or did you find yourself with too many pairs of unwanted pity gloves? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch with us on social media or by emailing us at 3ravenspodcast@gmail.com, which is the best place to send us thoughts and tales of your adventures. We love hearing from you, so please send us an email. We always enjoy reading them.
We really do. Until next time, though, while our ribbons on our birch trees have fluttered that way, we'll go this way.
And remember, don't whistle till you're out of the woods. Our theme song is the traditional folk ballad Three Ravens, performed by Eleanor Conlon and Ben Harbour. And our logo is by Ollie James Dare.
The Three Ravens podcast is a Rustin Stardust production, produced by me, Martin Vaughs. Thanks for listening.
God send every gentleman such hounds, such hawks, and such leman with a down, derry, derry, derry.